Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome everybody to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. You're listening to the American Family Radio Network. We thank you for tuning in or logging on, whichever one you did, to join us here this morning. Ed Battagliano co-hosting with me today, back from the bug. Had a little bug for a day or two.
Had a little nasty bug.
Yeah, but it's gone.
It is gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah.
So welcome back.
Well, thank you. Good to be back. I actually am glad to be out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It is maybe hard for people to understand.
Walker Wildman, controlling our Facebook world over there. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. We're on Facebook Live this morning, as we are Monday through Friday, so you can watch the show there, or you can go to AFR.net and listen live.
Has our sound turned on?
Our sound is working.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other day it wasn't working.
Yeah. People were commenting saying, the sound's not working. Sound's
is it working now, though?
Yeah, okay. It is.
Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and OneNewsNow.com. Hey, good morning, Fred.
Good to be here. Read my lips. That's what it was. Can you do it?
Reading lips?
Reading lips. That's what they had to do there. It was a little challenge for our audience. Read
you know
lips.
What gets what's not good when it comes to reading lips is some of these coaches on the sidelines.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a couple articles about maybe like, I think it was the Patriots coach or... Anyways, it was some of these NFL teams in the playoffs and how these coaches get so mad at, you know, if they lose or something. And the camera's always on you when you're a coach.
Right. A lot of times you don't even need to read lips. They've got microphones everywhere.
Yeah.
And you can hear stuff on the sidelines. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before they do that, they ought to do what they do when they're calling plays. They put the boards up in front
of their face.
Yeah, clipboard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, thank you for listening today. It's a big week for us here in the good old U.S. of A. It's inauguration week, transfer of power. On Friday, we'll have the parade, the swearing-in ceremony, and we'll have a new president in the White House on Friday night. And so Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, is being made secure for Friday. Yours truly will be in attendance. I'm going to be... going there for the inauguration, and I don't know. I'm not going to get in front of the Capitol steps. I'm going to be a few blocks away, watching. But I'm going to be in a position, and Walker is too, to watch the parade.
Yeah,
we're going to be in a position to watch the parade. But you talk about a fortress. I mean, that'll be the most secure place on earth.
Yeah,
on Friday,
six blocks or something, isn't it?
Yeah, what is it, Walker? They're going to expand.
Yeah, I don't know
perimeter.
How many square miles it is, but it's, you know, it's six, at least probably six at a minimum blocks that they have a literal fence. It's going to be a wall going around D.C., parts of D.C. around the Capitol and stuff. And the only way you can get in is if you go through a screening process.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
go through the TSA.
Yeah.
So they'll be doing that at every checkpoint.
I mean, there are no trucks going to get in there. No cars are going to get in there. You know how they...
Concrete barriers.
Yeah, they ran over people in Nice, France, Germany. Mm. Well, that's not going to happen. They're going to shoot down any drones.
Right.
They've already got thousands of National Guard and police there.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not going to be able to penetrate. You may get a crazy or two here that, you know, try to run onto the street or whatever like that. But I wouldn't want to be that person. Okay? Wouldn't want to be that person. But secondly... The demonstrators, and there are going to be some far-left crazies there that are going to be demonstrating for their causes of anarchism. That is a word, right?
It is now.
Okay.
Yeah. Anarchy. Anarchism.
Yeah.
Is anarchism.
Anarchia.
Okay. I feel as if I'm making fun of
it. Well, today's issues, it's a word.
Is anarchism is not a word, is it?
I've never heard it, but I just
look it up, Walker. See if anarchism.
Hey, maybe the egg is on my
face.
Hey,
in the day of Donald Trump, it's a new day in America, and we can.
Anarchism is a word.
Anarchism.
It's the belief in the abolition of all government and the organization of society.
Okay. Scramble some eggs and apply it to my face.
Well, so let the record show that Brother Tim used correct English there, even though he didn't know if he was or not. Didn't intend to.
And that'll be a question for Trivia Friday this
there
Friday,
you go.
All right?
Anarchism is a real word.
These whacked out anarchists, and they're out there. They're small, numbers are small, but they somehow migrate to big events and they protest.
Camera time.
They protest for no government. It's amazing. But you're going to have your far lefties there, and they're going to be protesting this, that, and the other. And that's fine as long as they're peaceful. But they're going to be outside the perimeter. So they're not going to get attention unless the media goes and seeks them out, I don't think, Walker.
And they're supposed to be bikers for Trump there. And
they're for Trump.
They're for Trump. And they said they're going to create a wall of meat.
That is
what they describe themselves as.
What may be of concern is having some of these protesters not sneak in, but gain access to the secure perimeter by posing as a regular attendee.
Well, they could do that, but they're going to be slammed to the pavement.
Yeah. Once they get in.
Yeah.
But.
And they're not going to be able to have a sign. Their sign, if you take signs, this is all, again, within the perimeter.
Right.
Okay. The secure perimeter. If you take signs in there, you can't take a stick to hold your sign up. You've got it's a placard. A certain size. So,
right.
You know, I'm just saying that the Secret Service, who's in charge of all the security there, is taking this extremely seriously. As I say, it'll be the most secure place on Earth, with the possible exception of Israel.
Right.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw one or two individuals try to leap the barrier to get into the parade route. Because
get ready to meet a stun gun.
Yeah.
Then it's not going to be a good ending for these people. They're not going to get... If they're going to try to penetrate the perimeter and disrupt the parade, they're not going to be able to do it in any great numbers.
Right.
So, they're not going to be able to accomplish their mission, which is to be to stop the parade.
Right.
And to get their message out of anarchy or, you know, the world, the global warming or, or you know, abort all babies, whatever their cause is.
It'll make for great television, though.
Well, this isn't like a political rally. You're going to have Secret Service surrounding
what I'm saying.
Now the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they don't sit down and chat with protesters.
No. Right, they don't.
No, that's what I'm saying. This is not going to be, if you have something like what you're talking about, Walker, where a couple of protesters run out there in the middle of the street, the Secret Service is not going to go out there and negotiate with them.
No. Right.
About, come on, guys.
The takedown will be swift and brutal.
Yeah. If the cops at a ball game do that for the nut that runs across the field, you know.
They'll even make it, because from what I understand watching the last inauguration, I think there's either National Guard or Metro Police lined every 5 or 10 feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Along the whole parade route.
Yeah. So I'm not worried about it. You know, some people say, aren't you worried about some kind of these nut jobs that are going to be there protesting? I'm not worried about it inside the perimeter. They're going to be in other places. And as I say, if they want to protest and they want to do it peacefully and in orderly fashion and not harass other people, go for it.
The American way.
I think what you may see on that morning, and there's been some little hints of this, they may try to interfere with the metros coming in from outlying areas, stand on the tracks or whatever the case may be. They may do that kind of thing.
Well, they stand on the tracks, it sure ain't going to end well for them, I'll tell you that right now. That would be a bad way to protest.
Mm-hmm. But these people are not sane.
No,
all the
that's
time.
Right.
They really aren't.
I know. As I've said before, the far left people are closer to anarchy than they are to law and order.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Your conservative Americans, your Tea Party types who go to Washington to protest, do you remember how the Park Service lauded the Tea Party about 6 years ago? They said, you know, you got 1 million people here, or how many they got? Hundreds of thousands. And they cleaned up all their trash.
Right. As opposed to the Occupy Wall Street protests.
Who are dirty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They're dirty.
Left their garbage.
Not big on personal hygiene.
And even in this the South Dakota pipeline protest, didn't it cost $20 million?
Oh yeah.
In security fees and cleanup fees.
Oh, these people they'll get spray cans and spray obscenities graffiti. And they have no reason to live other than whatever their little cause is. Mm-hmm. And it's usually against God.
Right.
These people are God haters. I've seen them before up close and personal at a Operation Rescue rally in Birmingham, and I've seen them other places too.
Yeah.
The opposition; these people just—you look in their eyes, and they're just full of hate for God. So, anyway, it's going to be a wonderful Friday, and looking forward to the parade, where bands from all over America will be coming down Pennsylvania Avenue. The president-elect, the vice president-elect, and their spouses will be coming down. And I don't know how long the parade's going to be. There's a chance it'll be raining on a Friday.
Take an umbrella. Or buy one for $50 when you're there.
Be more than 50, probably. Because good old capitalism gouging will be taking place on the nation's capital.
Hey, get your inauguration
umbrella. If the hotel room prices are any indication, I'm not telling anybody what I'm paying. It's embarrassing. Yeah, I am taking the pillows and the sheets when I leave that room, and it still won't be fair. All right, Fred, what kind of hard news you got there for us?
Well, I have to make an announcement first. My dear wife has put up...
Wait a minute. I could sell those sheets and the pillows as an inauguration on eBay and get my money back.
That's right.
And if you really wanted to make money... I might entail a lie or two, but you could say this. Listen, this is from a room immediately after Donald Trump got up the next morning. And
right.
So this is the president of the United States slept on these sheets.
Have washed them, though.
No, don't
wash them.
No.
Unwashed
original
sheets.
No, I don't think even. No, let's move on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Fred, I interrupted you. Go right ahead, Fred. Tell
My
us
dear
going.
Wife has put up with me 37 years today.
Hey, congratulations.
Hand claps all around.
37 years.
Wow. Yeah. Is she from Canada as well?
No,
Mississippi, right?
She's a Mississippi girl.
Yeah.
And we met at Bible school in Springfield, MO. And got married there.
Back in the day?
37 years ago. So.
Hey, this is interesting.
That's how you became legal, wasn't it, Fred, here?
How
you
became legal?
You married a U.S. citizen.
Well, that kind of greased the wheels for the old green card, yeah.
Well, that's interesting because Ed hails from Nashua, New Hampshire.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so Fred hails from Nova Scotia.
He's a little further north.
Well, to Ed... Fred is Yankee.
That's right.
You Northerner.
I also married a Mississippi girl. Met her at Bible College in Dallas.
Saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is an irony. One's named Fred. One's named Ed.
Yep.
Both married Mississippi girls from, and they both ended. I noticed y'all ended up here.
Yes.
And not in the Great White North.
Hey, Fred, can I find that on One News Now?
The story about his anniversary.
Well, and the lesson to be learned here for the guys is if you meet a girl from Mississippi, watch out.
Yes, that's right.
You're going to end up
change.
Here
for the better.
Right.
I want to say that publicly for the better.
Yeah. Those Southern drawl will get to you every time.
Oh yeah.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano, Walker Wildman, and Fred Jackson. And you can check us out at Facebook Live. All right, Fred, what else you got in the news there?
Well, speaking of a Southerner, Congressman John Lewis of the Atlanta area is still making news. It's the big political story this morning. You will remember from an NBC interview over the weekend, Congressman Lewis, a Democrat well-known from the civil rights activities he was involved with many years ago. He went on NBC, I think Meet the Press, and he said he's not going to the inauguration because he thinks Donald Trump is a illegitimate president. Donald Trump responded to that and said, you know, that Congressman Lewis really needs to not be saying those kinds of things and should do some more work in his own congressional district, which Donald Trump says is in a mess. All right. So here's what we've learned since then. It appears that this is a bit of a practice of Congressman Lewis because he boycotted the inauguration of George W. Bush. He said George W. Bush was an illegitimate mm-hmm. president back then. So he's done this. This time it's a little different, though, because more than, I think, 40 Democrats now have said they're going to boycott the inauguration as well.
Good.
Well, Congressman Lewis is getting some blowback from all of this. It was very interesting yesterday. Martin Luther King's son went and visited Donald Trump at Trump Towers in New York. They had a great meeting. I understand they prayed together there. The press came out after Martin Luther King's third came downstairs, and they were there. And it was interesting. I was listening to a montage of the questions the reporters asked him yesterday after his meeting with Donald Trump. And aren't you upset at how Congressman Lewis is being treated? And here's what Martin Luther King III said. He said, you know, a lot of people say some bad things at the heat of the moment. He wouldn't let himself be trapped by the reporters who wanted him to make some inflammatory statement. Well, another kind of spinoff of this whole story occurred last night on Tucker Carlson's program on Fox News. He found a gentleman by the name of Mason Weaver, who is a former Black Panther. He's a member of the Black Panther movement, and he's also an author now. He is very upset with – now, he is a Black man. He is an African-American, former member of the Black Panthers.
And the Black Panthers were a revolutionary – you talk about anarchists, a group from the 60s created out of the civil rights movement.
He is absolutely outraged, not at Donald Trump. He is outraged at Congressman Lewis for making this kind of remark. And he has some advice for Congressman Lewis. Here's what he had to say, a portion of his interview last night on Fox News.
The Congressional Communist Black Caucus that has every district they own and control is a ghetto hellhole. It's a place that no one wants to go to. They're in control of every inner city school system, every inner city police, every inner city jail. They have produced nothing but drugs and misery. Black-owned businesses, Black-owned housing has been reduced. They have presided over the destruction of Black people. They should be ashamed of themselves, and I don't understand why any Black person could be a Democrat.
Wow. What was he trying to say there? Exactly.
I didn't quite get the message.
No,
I wish people would just say what they mean.
Just say what they mean. It's easier for us to understand.
What he's basically saying is that after 8 years of Barack Obama, you look at the inner cities of this city. You look at Chicago, and he's making reference to Atlanta here, Detroit, Memphis, I suppose. You look at all those cities.
I think he's saying more than that, Fred.
He's
saying more than 8 years. He's saying the war on poverty back to the 60s basically is an utter failure for the African American community, and they've been decimated. And so he's saying John Lewis represents failure in delivering a better way of life for the African American community beyond his championing of the civil rights movement, which everybody applauds, that's what I got from him. He's saying it's the welfare state has destroyed the Black family, and he called the places, these inner cities, hell holes. When Donald Trump said that, he got it was like it was a racist comment, and here's this gentleman saying they are hell holes, these inner cities where these folks have to, many African Americans have to live. Hey, Frank Turek is with us now. And joins us from Charlotte, NC, and went to get Frank on a few minutes ago. But Frank, good morning to you.
It was my fault, man. I didn't get the text. I would have been on here a lot longer, 7 minutes ago. I totally blew it. I'm sorry.
Hey, what do you think about this, John Lewis? Donald Trump dust up.
Well, I think that you can't really nuance on Twitter. I think what Trump meant by his tweet was that lately things aren't going well in the inner city. I don't think he was saying that John Lewis didn't do anything in his career. Obviously, he did. I think he's saying that the inner city right now is awful. And as you guys just said, it is. And as the gentleman you just had on just said, it is. And by the way, it's not just an issue for blacks. It's an issue for whites as well.
Right.
The biggest problem, and I don't even know why we talk about whites and blacks. We don't just talk about Americans. The biggest problem in America today, other than the fact we're killing people through abortion, is fatherlessness. You cannot replace a father with a welfare check, and that's what the United States government is encouraging and has been encouraging for the past nearly 50 years. We can replace your father with a welfare check. No, we can't.
You know, it's almost like somebody set out to destroy the Black family, though. Uh, The reason I say that is prior to the civil rights movement and prior to the war on poverty that Lyndon Johnson started, which included the big welfare state, prior to handing out checks for having babies out of wedlock, the black family was intact.
It was intact.
Mm-hmm. You had moms and dads, and they were they were under persecution. Yes, they were under discrimination, and they had to live in that. But when they went home, their families were together. Mm-hmm. And
there were black businesses.
Yes.
Black home ownership.
Yeah. Yes. And now 73% of these children are born out of wedlock, and it's just a way of life. Mm-hmm. And I think what Donald Trump wants to do. Of course, he's just one man, even though he's president of the United States. But I think what he and Ben Carson want to do is start focusing on, encouraging black fathers to take responsibility for their children, get married, raise children, put the help. They can't do it alone. They can only be model. They can only encourage. But to start restoring some family order, some structure back into the inner city African-American community.
And it needs to be done in all of America, too, because marriage itself is dying. And now in the white community, if we want to call it that, I think out-of-wedlock births are over 40% now, if I'm not mistaken.
Imagine it's growing. That percentage is growing.
Yeah, well, imagine if the white birth, out-of-wedlock birth, was the same as the African-American, then it'd be the end of America as we know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting there.
Yeah. We need to change that. Turn that around.
Yeah. You know, we ought to start something like the American Family Association.
That is a great idea.
What do you think?
Yeah. All in favor, say aye.
Yeah. Well, this thing with John Lewis, though, the congressman from Atlanta, you know, he started it. He started it by publicly saying that Donald Trump was an illegitimate president. The Russians stole the election, and basically this is what he said, and so he's not going to the inauguration. And then, well, if you're going to say something like that against Donald Trump, get ready to get smacked back.
That's
now,
right.
Now, right or wrong, get ready to get smacked back. And Donald Trump tweeted, hey, you need to Congressman Lewis needs to look at his own district that he represents. It's in terrible shape. He needs to do something about that. So now you could argue that's not a proper response for a president our president-elect to have when criticized. But, Donald Trump is not your normal ignorant politician, and especially if you say something like he's illegitimate. Mm-hmm. Maybe he would have had the same reaction if you talked about his comb-over, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
maybe he would. But you get what I'm saying? You hit Trump, Trump hits back.
Oh, right. He does. And all this talk about him being illegitimate, what's so often missed in this entire debate is the fact that what was exposed, if the Russians did expose it, and the guy over there in the museum, what's his name, Assange, he's saying, no, we didn't get this information from the Russians. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, the Russians did somehow hack the DNC emails. Nobody in the DNC is saying anything in those emails was false.
Yeah. Right.
They're admitting that what was exposed actually was true.
Well, I think what the Democrats would say is, since we already had the media in our back pocket and nobody was going to reveal it, how dare the Russians make it public?
Yeah. And whose fault is it that the DNC left their door unlocked?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
it's like
true.
Me leaving my door unlocked, somebody steals something in my house, and then I'm blaming the door.
But according to the Democrats, all our doors ought to be unlocked because we ought to have open borders, so it serves them right. There you go.
All right, Frank Turek, ladies and gentlemen, what's your website and when's your show?
Crossexamined.org, Saturday, 9 Central, 10 Eastern. I think we're going to be talking about the inauguration. We'll see what happens on Friday, but we'll talk something about that. I think that's going to be interesting.
Crossexamined.org with Dr. Frank Turek. See you, Frank. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. We shall take a break for news. Right? No, not news. We've got some announcements for you. And then we'll be back with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
Anarchism straight ahead.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Todd Starnes on his new book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again.
My book offers practical advice on fighting and winning the war on traditional values. It lays out the plan to fight back against the secular humanists and the gender revolutionaries and the social justice warriors.
We'll also hear from Abraham Hamilton III, Dr. Alex McFarland, and the latest in the news. That's next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hey, do you want to go on a vacation with a purpose? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. A lot of people love to go to the beach. I'm one of them. How about the mountains? Yeah, a lot of folks are raising their hand right now when I say the mountains. Well, this year, why don't you go with us on a spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and have a vacation with an educational and a spiritual purpose? If you'd like to go with us in June or September to D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, we'd love to have you join us. Just find out all the information at spiritualheritagetours.com. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will join us as our historian, and he'll be commenting all along the way on our rich Christian heritage here in the U.S. We hope you can join us, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. An epidemic of biblical proportion is spreading across the fruited plain at this hour. The Centers for Disease Control has yet to identify the malady, but it seems to be an isolated outbreak impacting liberals, millennials, and Hollywood celebrities. The affliction is called Trump Derangement Syndrome. Symptoms include irrational thought, delusional ranting, and a feverish flop sweat. There have also been unconfirmed reports of liberals spontaneously combusting upon hearing Trump's name. An Episcopal church in California decided to no longer pray for the president by name, fearing for the safety of the congregation. It appears the containment zone seems to be outside the Washington Beltway. Researchers are not sure if Trump derangement syndrome will dissipate after Inauguration Day, but there are fears it might linger. Should you come across an afflicted liberal, please direct them to the nearest safe space. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. We thank you for listening to American Family Radio. You can watch live at Facebook, our Today's Issues page. You can also access AFR through the app on your smartphone or other mobile device. And you can listen on the internet if you want to at AFR.net. Couple quick items. One is we're leaving for the Holy Land March 9th out of New York. We're going to be going March 9th through the 17th, our annual tour of the Holy Land. And we're about to have to wrap things up, but we had an extension for our registration. So we've got, I don't know, 5 or 6 seats left. If you would like to go with us, there's still time. Not much time, but there's still time to go with us on that tour of Israel. And we're going to be leaving, as I said, from JFK in New York. And everybody on the trip will be, most everybody on there will be either supporters of AFA or listeners to AFR.
And you all fly on the same flight and everything?
It's a liberal-free trip. What'd you say?
No, cross your fingers.
No liberals allowed.
Well, they come if they want to, but they're paying to make themselves miserable because they're going to be with a bunch of Christian conservatives. So if they really want to do that to themselves, they can do it, I guess. Go ahead. What?
You all going to be on the same flight on the way?
Oh yeah,
yeah. So
oh,
that's good. Yeah. You get to know each other
yeah.
and
yeah, exactly. It's a lot of fun. Great trip. We take it once a year. Here's the website for the but we only got a few seats left. I mean, just a handful. TWHolyLand.com. TWHolyLand.com. And then, of course, for our tours of D.C. and Williamsburg coming up in June and September. A lot of people are signing up for that already. If you're interested in one of those trips, there are two separate trips, Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown, that's one trip, and then D.C., Mount Vernon is another trip. So either one of those, or you can go on both of them. They're you know, back to back. But just go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours with an S.com. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Joining us now is Sandy Rios. Sandy joins us every Tuesday that she can. She is a director of governmental affairs for the American Family Association. That's the federal government, government affairs. She is formerly president of Concerned Women for America, a longtime talk show host in Chicago, and now with her own show for the last couple, 3 years here on American Family Radio in the morning. Sandy Rios in the morning, airing from 7:05 to 8 o'clock Central Time. How long have you been on the air with us, Sandy?
You know what? When you said that, I was thinking, too, actually, I've been on the air for 4.5 years. Because wow. I started right before the last presidential convention.
Right.
That was one of the first things I covered, yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Been that, well.
Long time.
Hey, let me ask you, I haven't asked you this. This is just a general question. You've been in a state of depression for 8 years. dealing
yes,
with.
Yes, I think. And thank you for the thank you for the pharmaceutical company.
Well, anything we can do to help. Sandy is glad she joined our insurance program so she can take care of her medication that she's needed for 8 years. But let me ask you this. With the I know that Donald Trump wasn't your first choice, nor was he mine. But he is our president. I did vote for him, given the choices that we had. I think he's got a lot of positives. Donald Trump does. In terms of the positions that he has taken for our country, especially pro-life and on judges and on our relationship to Israel and on securing the borders. All these things are very good assets in terms of, I don't know if that's what you call it, assets. They were assets in the campaign, I think. Turning the economy around, lowering taxes, those kinds of things to help create more jobs in our country. So all those things were positives, I think, which led to the election of Donald Trump and led to Christians turning out for him in enormous numbers, especially over the Supreme Court. That was the number one issue, I think, that most Christians voted for him about. But what is your feeling now, having, you know, the secular progressives are out of power in the White House? Donald Trump comes into power. He surrounds himself with a lot of conservatives, with a lot of Christians. I mean, true believers in the Lord, and he has chosen them, not all of them, but a lot of the positions in his cabinet and high-level positions around him. What is your feeling and sense just generally going into this new administration, Sandy?
Well, Tim, I'm in spite of the characterization, I still am optimistic. I really am. I see some really good things happening, and as you just said, and we've discussed, I know a lot of people actually that are close to him, and they're good people, and they have great judgment. There is a battle going on. Will it ever stop? I don't think so. I mean, there is a battle even going on in his inner circle between people who I think have really strong conservative principles and some who would are much more compromising. And so that's a constant battle. It is coming out in the nominees. It's coming out in positions that you'll never hear about. So it's just a battle. But, you know, that's the nature. You know, that is the nature, certainly, of politics. It's the nature of politics in a church, too. It's just more blatant. I mean, there are always going to be struggles. So it's an imperfect candidate. And when are they not? It's just that, for, you know, perhaps Donald Trump's imperfections are more glaring because he's kind of he's a big character. But I'm optimistic, Tim. When I see jobs coming back, we see that almost daily. And when I stop to remember that the Supreme Court was almost lost forever, at least for generations, and that we have a chance to pull it back, you know, I'm grateful. I think this is a time, when I see the appointees up there, that he has appointed, not all of them thrill me, but a lot of them do. We haven't talked much about the EPA and the environmental regulations, but the people that are behind the people are they don't believe that mankind is capable of changing temperatures and affecting weather. They have, even if they don't claim it, they have a view of something greater than themselves. And they believe in being good stewards of the earth, but not taking on some religion that has no merit. You know, so that's a good thing, and that's happening too. The environmental movement alone was set to tank our economy and take over our way of life. Now, these battles are huge, and they will not be won easily. And if we thought that one election was going to put away the struggle, we were just being naive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to be in this for the long haul, both politically and on the issues that we care about, but also spiritually.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Sandy. I don't know that we'll ever see anything like what happened election night, pardon the cough there, again in American presidential history. Maybe we will in terms of the upset. It was monumental. It was like it was as if the Cubs won the World Series, if that could ever happen. You know,
imagine that.
Huh?
Or the Packers beat Dallas.
Yeah. Or the Packers beat, yeah. But who would ever, you know, who would ever? So I guess the same year the Cubs win the World Series for the 100-plus years, that you have a situation where a man who has no political experience at all, except making donations to candidates, and who claimed to fame is 10 years on national television, which, by the way, worked to his advantage because his name ID was so high. But he was basically a populist who also adopted some conservative values and appeal to Christians, and it reached out to Christians, even though he had not lived a Christian lifestyle. It's just the whole thing you couldn't make up, okay?
Right.
I mean, people would say that's too bizarre. That could never happen. And here he wins. He actually wins in a race where he was probably 90-10 disfavored, or she was probably 90-10 favored on election night, and yet he wins an election, and it's just remarkable. But so what I wanted to ask you, though, is he beat, by he, I mean Trump. If you think about it, first of all, he beat the globalist. Listen to the groups that he had to beat to win. The globalists and all their money. I'm talking about the George Soros people.
Right.
Okay, the people who want to bring down America and replace it with an international system of government, maybe a monetary system, that kind of thing. Okay, those are huge interests. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of George Soros. Then you've got China, who doesn't want him to win. All right, you've got the Democrats, obviously, who hate Trump and want to see him lose. You've got the liberal media, who hate him every day, all day, and then you've got the Hollywood and entertainment business.
And the Republican establishment.
That's what I was going to say. Finally, number six is the Republican establishment and the never-Trump crowd from the Republican side who wanted to see him lose. They wanted Hillary Clinton to win before they wanted Donald Trump to win. So when you consider the odds there that I've just mentioned that he went up against, did Donald Trump, and was still able to win, is just, as I say, we'll go down in history as probably the most improbable victory for a presidential candidate in history. And here's what I wanted to ask you, though, saying all that to ask you this. What is the relationship going to be like now with the Republican establishment and Donald Trump? Because they still don't like him, I would guess, and he doesn't care much for them. That's the sense I get. Kind of a tenuous relationship at best, and this is going in. Who's going to drive the ship there, him or the establishment?
Well, that's interesting. The smart thing that he has done, even though I don't like it, is that he has pulled in certain parts of the establishment inside his tent. And by doing that, he has bridged a gap. And for instance, let me just say, he's appointed Elaine Chao to be secretary. Gosh, I can't remember which. She used to be labor. Can't remember which.
Is it commerce?
Elaine Chao. Yeah, commerce. She's married to Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
And so Elaine is, I think I've told you before, is, from all accounts, was the most conservative member of Bush's cabinet. So that's a bridge to and a diffusion of McConnell's opposition to him right away. And then he's got Reince Priebus, who's the head of the RNC, as his chief of staff in the White House. And Reince, of course, with all of his contacts with the establishment. So that, as again, as much as I personally don't like that, because I'm not a fan of the establishment, it's actually very smart. And there was a long article this morning, I believe it was in the Post, about all of these Republicans who signed on to the Never Trump movement are finding themselves kind of on a blacklist for appointments and all kinds of stuff in the Trump administration. They're really grousing about it, you know, that they can't, you know, the word inside D.C. is that, you know, the Trump administration, after he was elected, was just inundated with resumes. People, of course, wanting to, this is the way it works in Washington. It's big, you know, it's a big industry. And the Never Trumpers, this long list, they're not breaking in. They're not getting callbacks. They're not getting a hearing. I was reading one, according to this article, one that they mentioned, there was a meeting of, whatever his interest is, there was a meeting of them, and all of his subordinates were invited, but he was left out. So that's kind of a partial answer to you, Tim. I think if I had to put my money on something, I would put my money on Trump prevailing, simply because one of the problems with the leadership, and I'll just say Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and the others, you can fill in the blank, is that they lack backbone, and he doesn't. And generally speaking, men that don't have backbone, you know, follow the leader. However, what I see is that then they undermine you in other ways that you maybe can't see. They might not confront you, but they'll work behind the scenes. So that's the part that I think he's in most danger of.
And, you know, Sandy, it's interesting that a few minutes ago you talked about how these sorts of things happen in churches as well, in terms of there being battles, and you know the fight doesn't end. It's really interesting, because, you know, if a church gets a new pastor, you know, the people who were praying for wisdom and praying for the right person to be selected, and you know the right pastor to come along, those folks don't suddenly decide, oh, well, we got a new pastor, so now our time of praying and working is over. You don't do that. I mean, the church can't be successful if you do that. The same thing is true, you know, for those who are happy that Hillary Clinton did not get selected, but Donald Trump did. These, especially Christians, we need to continue praying, and we need to take this reprieve from four more years of secular progressive rule. That we need to take this time of reprieve and get busy being the church in America, because this country is still very, very sick, and we cannot sit back and expect Donald Trump to right this ship.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I just, because this is the time for us to concentrate on the heart and soul of our country, which is something a political leader can't really do, and he's not capable of doing. We know what's wrong. You know, it's like you just said, we are sick. We know the physician, the great physician. And we have to be more aggressive in introducing him to our friends and neighbors, and worry, maybe concentrate more on that than we have in the past, about teaching them who God is and let God do the transformation. He's done it in our own life, and he will do it in our friends and our neighbors and our family members' lives. We have a lot of work to do.
Let me ask you this, Sandy. Talking to Sandy, we got two or three more minutes here with Sandy. Sandy Rios joining us. Sandy, what would be, speaking of our spiritual condition in America, what should be our prayer as Christians now? I think God has answered our prayer to give us a reprieve from wickedness and evil in our being promoted from the White House. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Mr. Obama's spiritual condition is. I know he's lost as a goose. He doesn't know the Lord. He couldn't stand for the things he stands for if he didn't know the Lord. I pray that he would be saved and give his life to Christ while there's still time. What should be our – but Mr. Trump, you know, I don't know what his condition either is. He's sympathetic with the Christian religion, but I don't know that I've ever heard him say, hey, I've repented of my sin and given my life to Christ, so I pray that he would do the same thing. But what should be our prayer as believers right now going into this new administration and this new time of, a reprieve for us as Christians?
Well, I think we should pray for President Trump, for his safety, for his family,
right,
and pray for his heart, pray for him spiritually. I do believe that we witness at least the beginnings of a transformation of him. That's just my impression. And some behind the scenes would tell you that, but I just think we did see him change, and let's ask that God would continue that great work in him, because for his own sake, and he will bear the weight of this world on his shoulders as he serves as president. And also then that God really, we prayed it before, but this is not a new prayer, that God would bring revival in our personal lives, in our hearts, turn us to God in such a powerful way that the rest is a cakewalk. Meaning, God will just, you know how he, when God brings his powerful Holy Spirit in his full presence, the barriers just fall, just things fall in place, and the rights are made wrong, and people sort themselves out. That's what we need in our own personal life, and in the life of this country, which is our extended family. And then that we would be faithful, whatever it takes, whatever that means, that God would find us faithful, that we would wake up every day and be faithful to whatever he's called us to do.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Sandy. Take care. Look forward to seeing you in Washington at the inauguration.
Very good. Yeah, see you really soon, Tim. Okay. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's Sandy Rios joining us. Appreciate Sandy being on. What do you think about what she said, Walker?
Well, I think she's right that our country has been granted a reprieve, but now is the time that we actually have to take action. You know, we've been upset and complaining about the state of our country for the last 8 years, well, arguably for the last few decades. But now we're finally going to have potentially an administration that's not hostile to Christianity and hostile to our values. And so Christians need to take advantage of this, and the church needs to. I wrote an article the other day. The church needs to become more active. We need to make a difference, both in the public arena and, you know, on a local level.
Evangelizing and
right, exactly.
Sharing our faith and changing the world. Ed?
Yeah, I mean, that's what Christians are supposed to be doing. And it's not, as we've said many times, it's not either or. It's both and. Christians should be praying. They should be preaching the gospel. They should be witnessing. But they should also be speaking up at school board meetings. They should be addressing public policy. They should be mm-hmm. calling their congressmen, congresswomen, senators. They should be calling companies that are promoting the wrong kinds of practices for our country, because in a sense that is what salt and light means. Jesus said mm-hmm. that's what the Christian is. We're salt and light. So we do the things of light, which is speaking, preaching the gospel and teaching. Salt means restraining evil, I think, and also making sure the right policies and practices are being followed, because God's purposes for mankind are fulfilled only when we do things his way. Mm-hmm. Whenever we break away from those is where we find pain and the disintegration of families and thus communities and nations. And there's only one way to order your life properly, and that's God's way, and Christians are supposed to declare that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of things that the church is responsible for, but I'll say this, one thing I'm looking forward to seeing how it works itself out is when and if Congress decides that they are going to withdraw funds from Planned Parenthood and transfer them to health clinics, women's health clinics that don't perform abortions, that is a chance for the church in America, everyone in the church in America, to make their voice heard, because that should not be a controversial issue within the walls of the church. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be highly disappointed if I do not see many, many Christians speaking out that we need to quit funding abortions.
Well, absolutely, with tax dollars.
Right.
Planned Parenthood. And on the other hand, or by the same token, whichever metaphor applies there, what is by the same token? Where'd that come from?
I'm not sure.
I don't either.
By the same
Walker,
token.
Walker, why don't you do a Wikipedia search on the expression by the same token? Anyway, I think people understand what I'm saying. We need to support our local crisis pregnancy centers.
Yes. Good.
Almost every community has them. If you want to be pro-life, that's one big way you can be pro-life is supporting adoption agencies.
Churches should. You know, our own Pastor Joseph Parker, who's on the air for, I think, Urban Family, but he's been on staff. One of the things he does in his own time, he's also a pastor, you know, when he's not here, is he has pro-life rallies, you know, at churches. And one of the things he's told me is he said, you'd be surprised how few churches in a community either know that they have a crisis pregnancy center. Most churches don't even know it. And then B, he said, they don't support it. They don't give money to it. And it's really a tragedy, especially with so many pro-life churches and pro-life Christians. This is a no-brainer. Find out if you've got a crisis pregnancy center in your community, and then get your church to support it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to say this. for all the Christians, some of the Christians leaders that spoke out against Donald Trump during the election and criticized his character, his actions, and things like that, and said, I can't vote for that man, etc. So they got involved in the public arena then. If Congress proposes to defund Planned Parenthood and I do not hear from Beth Moore, I do not hear from Russell Moore,
Max Lucado,
and all
Piper,
the other
John
ones who got involved in the public arena and said, I'm not voting for Trump. If they don't speak out against Planned Parenthood when it comes to that process, I'm going to be highly disappointed.
Right. Yeah, we need to be consistent. And so hopefully those Christian leaders you just mentioned will be consistent when the day comes to get Christians involved in calling their senators and their representatives to end the funding for Planned Parenthood. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Evie Tagliano and Walker Wildman. Yes, Walker.
Yeah, I had to change the subject here. I'm reading from the Washington Examiner. This is just out that Trump, president-elect, soon to be President Trump, is eyeing a 10% spending cut and a 20% slash of federal workers.
You talk about a wailing and gnashing of teeth from Washington, D.C. You start tampering with the number of federal employees that we have, our budget cuts. Oh, my word.
Mm-hmm. And what's odd is what's going to be even harder on some of these departments is President Trump has promised to increase military spending and do a couple of other things, infrastructure, you know, improvements in our country. And so those are going to be increases, which means the decreases in spending for some departments are going to be dramatic, because it's going to be more than 10% to make up for those spending increases.
Yeah, I wonder how he's going to handle all that, because you got to have you can do a lot as president of the United States, but the one thing you can't do, you can't appropriate money. That's the Congress's job.
And right.
Even the money that the executive branch spends, that is the president, he has to get it from the Congress.
Right.
Yeah. Here's what this says specifically. It says through 4 years, they're going to cut federal employees by attrition, which means people retiring or leaving the workforce, and they're going to put a hiring freeze on no more hiring of federal workers. Use the employees we have now.
Well, that might work. That might work, but you're that might work. We'll see how that goes. All right, we're going to take a break for news and information from American Family Radio News Team and OneNewsNow.com. And we've got more. We got 25 more minutes after the break. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.